Snowy, are you a Guess Who fan? Are you familiar with the Guess Who?
Maybe not sufficiently, no.
This is important. See, you can't be a great Canadian band, I would argue, if you didn't have a tough time breaking through in the States.
That could be on a citizenship application next month, so I'll get ready for
yes.
it.
Yes. Well, congrats on that. That's exciting. Tell us about that and how you spent Canada Day here in 2020.
It is exciting. We'll be here 9 years this September. My daughter was born here. My son has lived all but 5 weeks of his life here. And, you know, we've taken a great deal of pride and honestly enjoyment out of living here. So we were on visas for a long time. We got our residency 2 years ago, August, and that clock is usually 3 years after residency, but due to our time here, it's two. And so we'll file that with a great deal of pride. And as for Canada Day, we spent it outside. A lot of just family time and bike rides. And I think I went for a rainy bike ride yesterday to get ice cream with my family. And that's how that day should be spent, I think.
Well, and I can't even imagine within the context of your life when around a year ago you were told you had a year to live. This has been an incredible journey for you. Give us the latest. How's your health? How are you feeling? And how have you enjoyed all the social media interactions?
Yeah, my health is, in the context of what you just said, which is entirely accurate, is really good. You know, my right hand and arm, I don't even think about because they haven't been of use to me for really the better part of 10 to 11 months. And, you know, I can't, with my face, kind of make some of the same expressions or smile like I could have. And that is a recent development going back to early April, but that appears to have stopped there. You know, as my doctor has said to me, with this disease, if you're not getting worse every single month, either you've been misdiagnosed or the medication you're on, in my case, is working. And so the more time I can put between any change and the day that I'm living, the more confidence I get that this is really working for me. And so if I have a small change here and there, that is, to me, okay. And the more time that's in between them, the more effective this has been. And as for social media, it's been overwhelming in a really, really good way. This trick shot campaign that the group at the Flames that works with Candace Gowdy put together has been nothing short of a real success and really fun. We've had, I think, closing in on 300 videos. We've raised in about 3 weeks $45,000 through people being creative and sporting and at times just silly with it. And that would bring our grand total since I announced my health in December to $185,000, every single dollar going to research.
That's amazing, Snowy. And I think we should pull back the curtain a little bit. You mentioned Candace. We could bring her on, and she certainly would not pat herself on the back enough. But maybe take us into where the Trick Shot for Snowy campaign was started. Why you felt it was a great idea and kind of how we ended up with those numbers that you talk about in the month of June.
Candace would be the first to say that the idea was not hers and it was the result of
brainstorm
by a group over the month of May. And Candace called me in late May and said, we have an idea for the month of June, which is ALS Awareness Month in this country. And the idea is a trick shot campaign. And anybody can do any sort of trick shot, athletic or not, and challenge two people, much like the Ice Bucket Challenge, the same kind of idea, and ideally make a small donation along with it. And so you hope it goes. You really hope that it becomes something that doesn't reach a few people you know and then die off. And we've now cut across, I think, each of the professional sports, mostly in hockey, but there have been present and former NBA players, NFL players, Theo Epstein of the Chicago Cubs. And so that is really, I think, when we have a chance to do something special is when it crosses the border into the U.S. and starts to cut across sports and industries and it becomes self-sustaining. You know, there are people who we see do a trick shot and they're in a small town far from here who we don't know. And that's when we know that our story of hope and of supporting research is really going. And while the month of June has ended, in no way do we think that this was a month of June only campaign.
No, I'm with you, Chris. I think it'll continue, especially into the summer. I'm curious. We were talking earlier today about Kelso's trick shot. Anything that stuck out to you? You got some favorites there on the list?
Yeah, Kelso, I think, tops the list for anybody who hasn't seen it. They need to. Kelso has got to be the best water skier and water sports guy I know, and all of this will go right to his head. But getting himself up, which is the easy part, wake surfing, but then getting a stick handed to him by his wife and stick handling on that board, and then scoring on a net that was on some sort of surfboard or floating board was pretty remarkable. And Kel said first take, and hey, everybody is saying first take right now. So who knows? Even our players with their take and Tree with his, there's a lot of mystery around exactly how many takes and whether a warm-up take counts as a take. But that one really stood out. Honestly, my kids, like my son's video of shooting a basketball out of my bedroom into a hoop down in the yard, and just his intro and enthusiasm. I watch that over and over. Same with my daughter with her ping pong bucket battle, as she said. She said there are two buckets and they're battling, and she was adorable. And when she said that, I thought, oh, I hope this goes in. And sure enough, it did. So I think it's been a great thing for our family. We watch it every day as a group of four and see what's new and what's creative. And it's just given us a great deal of enjoyment.
Yeah, I would say on Tree's video, I'm not sure. Maybe there was some creative video editing. We can't see after he shoots it what happens. So I don't know.
Yeah, it's
A little
definitely.
fishy there, Snowy. A little fishy
There's
on
multiple
Tree's trick
camera
shot.
angles, and
Yeah.
Tree, I think he did hike up there with a couple of buckets of pucks just in case. And I know he had a few sticks. He had Dylan Duvets, and he hit the light bank about four times, and then he tossed that to the side. And then Monty pointed out that it was a Monahan stick that Tree was using when it went in, so obviously it was going in. But I think the creativity is what's neat, and honestly, what's challenging right now. Because if you've been challenged at this point and you haven't come up with an idea, there's pressure. There's pressure to be creative.
You're not wrong. And we might need to talk about Johnny Gaudreau's hair, but maybe that's a conversation for a different day.
Oh, I saw that reply that said Kari Rama wants his hair back, and I was shocked.
That's good stuff. That's really
That is
good.
normal hair.
He is Chris Snow. He's assistant GM of the Calgary Flames, our guest here on Boomer in the Morning. If you want to participate, you still can. As Snowy said, it's not just a month of June thing. You can even start a new thread with your friends, challenge two buddies, and complete a trick shot using the hashtag trick shot for Snowy. And of course, go to calgaryflames.com/snowystrong to donate to ALS research and continue to make that number climb even higher than what we did in the month of June. Looking forward to seeing some more out there. And as Snowy said, at this point, you're going to have to get real creative. Chris, while we got you, maybe some real hockey talk, just your thoughts on the bubbles and the fact that it appears anyways right now, it'll be two Canadian cities chosen as the hubs.
It's exciting, and it feels like we're inching closer. I know there's been just a great deal of behind-the-scenes work, and you kind of wait for something to become real. And you know, I'm following along almost to the same degree that you are, in the sense that you know, I and we are not directly involved in this becoming a reality. That's in the hands of the league and the Players Association. But I think we're all really dying for some competitive sports to watch. And I know that our players and our staff, from our strength group to our equipment group to our medical group, have really not taken a break. They've been planning and helping the players from a distance to be physically, you know, nutritionally, mentally ready. And I think there's been a great deal of work put in by that staff and those players. And to see that rewarded, to see the game come back, to give Canadians something to watch on TV in the summer when, you know, with the Stanley Cup playoffs are always the highlight of every year. It'll look different, but I know that we're so excited for that product to come back.
Now, maybe pull back the curtain, take us inside those meetings. I mean, it's not your typical training camp when the players do come back. Do we know what that looks like, Chris? Is it, are we going to have 2-a-days for the Flames? Like, what's the biggest key, I guess, for you guys to be ready whenever the puck does drop at the end of July?
I honestly think the biggest key was the work that has been put in leading up to that start of camp, because if you come to camp not prepared, it'll be impossible to catch up. And so I think we feel very encouraged with the work that's put in by those groups that I just mentioned. And I think that for the coaches, in talking to Jeff Ward, what he's most excited about is he's had an opportunity to review everything that went on, and now you get to have essentially a full NHL training camp. So any changes to the way that you might kill a penalty or run a power play or defend or anything, you have an opportunity to do that. Now, the wild card is you won't have a chance to really pre-scout a team with that new look. So I think that it's going to be a fascinating playoff, because it's going to be really rooted in how prepared are you physically, mentally, with your systems, as opposed to studying your opponent. I mean, I don't think we played Winnipeg indoors once all year. So it's a highly unique situation, and it's a short series. So it's who is most mentally ready to go and compete and leave each shift behind and focus on the next one.
Now, maybe for your health, it makes more sense to stay in Calgary and stay at home. But what's the early word in terms of the traveling 50 that's going likely to Edmonton? Have those discussions begun? And I guess if you could just take us inside what the bubble might look like.
Yeah, I couldn't speak a great deal to the bubble, but I think for the traveling party, you'd be looking at, you know, you felt that 50 pretty quickly with players, with your locker room staff, with your coaches. So I don't think you're looking at, you know, a big management party trailing the team day to day up there. I would think that, you know, Brad will obviously be there, maybe somebody else, but that group of 50 will be filled up quite quickly. And that's probably the way it should be. It's going to be such a short period of time to get ready for those games and then play those games that excess people probably aren't necessary.
And I guess just kind of lastly, as we wrap things up, I know Tree had talked about it, I want to say about a week and a half ago, he's trying to get as many guys as he can in the city, of course, ahead of training camp. Do we know what phase two looks like? Have you got any reports back from those on-ice sessions? Take us inside phase two for the Flames.
Yeah, I've been working from home, so I have not laid eyes on that. I think that we have more and more players who are returning or have returned to skate, and I think it's been such an influx process, because the numbers of players allowed on ice has been fluid. That's changed. The quarantine has been in place, so players have had to decide, do I come back and lose my fitness level or wait a little bit and come back when, you know, I know that I can step in, or soon thereafter step in and not lose that fitness level. So I think that we've, and Tree in particular, has managed that, you know, player to player, tried to come up with, you know, the best plan with it's voluntary. So the players have had to decide that, but work also within the constraints of the quarantine issue. And again, with the bigger picture in mind of let's not lose weeks of fitness here, having to quarantine. So I do think that come July 10th, if that's the date that we start up, I think we'll have, the group in the best physical and mental space possible.
And of course, the big pressing question, has any CFL club contacted you for your field goal skills?
Oh, it was funny. The other day, Jeez. Who was I talking to? Oh, I was talking to Tim and Sid on their show. And one of them was saying that this whole trick shot thing was good until guys started hitting field goals of at least 45 yards. And I mean, I gave Theo Epstein a bit of a hard time because he said it was 50. I didn't see a tape measure, and his body comes flying through the screen in and out. And I said, well, where'd you start? Like the other end of the field? And he said, no, it's three steps. You can hear them. And I said, well, you were at least within earshot for three of those steps, but you were a projectile in and out of that screen. But no, that's something I did in college just for fun, was kicking with a friend. We would play out in the field and play horse effectively like you would in basketball, challenging each other to, okay, left hash 37 yards, right hash 40 yards, and move that ball around. And I would typically lose, but I just developed a little bit of a technique. I do not have strong, big legs, but I think if you just hit it right, you can actually do that.
So what's your, going back to your college days, like what's your career long here? What are we talking about?
47 cool, off good. The ground too, with one of those little like finger holders. Not.
Oh,
off.
Yeah.
But you know what? This ball was old. It was kind of soggy. We're going to say that, though I did have the thin air up here. So I still think I have 47 in me, but I'll take 43 at this point any day.
Like it. Love it. Chris Snow is our guest, the assistant GM of the Calgary Flames. He's joining us on Boomer in the Morning. Without Boomer, I'm Will Nault. He is Ryan Pinder.
Well, yeah, and all these CFL kickers now shaking in their boots. Like, this was all supposed to be good fun and games, and now guys, they're worried already about a season going, and now if they do, that they're going to have to beat you out for a job. It's an evil twist here. I don't like it.
I had no line, no pressure, no anything, just a couple excited little kids. So I had the right environment for it.
We had Brian Burke on earlier today, as we do every Thursday, and Will asked, knowing you were coming on the show, about what Berkey thought about what was happening and your role with the organization, how you met. He told some great stories. One of the things he did mention was that he was really impressed with the work you did preparing a coaching staff for an upcoming opponent in terms of tendencies and habits. I imagine you've been poring over the Winnipeg Jets. What do you notice about the Jets, and I guess maybe what has allowed them to have the success they've had despite huge turnover this past offseason?
Well, I think I'll keep a little bit of that to myself, but I think we view them as having very, very good forwards who can score at any moment. I think they play with a great deal of team structure. And I think from the data perspective, we just have a lot of it these days. And I think that the challenge consistently is finding the right data that is actionable, that you can do something with. Because a lot of it tells an interesting story, but at the end of the day, how can a coach or a player apply that? And I've come to believe over time that the most important data is really the data we have on ourselves. Because in the moment, in a short series, a tendency may or may not show up for an opponent, and you may or may not be able to act on that. But knowledge of yourself as a team, as an individual player, when they're our guys in our environment, if they're aware of that, if they can work on that, that can be, I think, the bigger advantage. And that's something we put a great deal of effort into over the last few months, is sharing more of that with our players, giving them access to a video tool that we've built that allows them to watch any of those data points or sequences, and hopefully come back to us with more awareness, more readiness to really perform and improve upon whatever those areas may be that could make them a little bit more efficient and us a little bit better poised to win.
Yeah, I wonder what, and that's, I think the actionable point is a really good one. It's okay, you're going to tell me that Mark Scheifele is good at faceoffs. Well, there you go. What can I do about it?
Right.
But what about, and you do talk about you guys. I thought, you know, personally, that the club had played their most consistent hockey of the season heading into the pause. You may agree or disagree. It's certainly not a consensus thought, but were there certain habits that correlated with strong play that you were seeing more of as you moved towards the pause, or not?
Well, I think you often look at how good are your special teams, and our power play was excellent in the games between the deadline and the pause. And I think you often just look at how well are you defending, because if you're defending well, that means your structure is good. That means your kind of group's adherence to playing as a unit and playing with real discipline is good. And so those are often indicators. I think that the more time our players had with that coaching staff, that obviously changed a little bit into the year, the more comfort they got with that. And we got good goaltending. So I think there's no question that we felt like our best hockey was in front of us over those last 12 games. We felt that our defense was deep, and our defense was healthy, and that had not been the case prior to that. So I think that's where our excitement comes in, is if we can be really ready to play when that puck drops, we think from a roster standpoint, we are definitely the strongest we have been and had been at any point this year.
Last one for you. We're with Chris Snow, the AGM of the Calgary Flames. As a guy that collects data, that breaks a bunch of video down, that is a huge hockey nut, that's your job, does the notion of triple headers every day for like 2 weeks get you excited, or is that a little overwhelming?
It gets me excited. I mean, it'll be torn with good weather outside to sit in and watch hockey all day. But I think it will be just so unique that it will be enjoyable. You know, you won't have to wait for games. I always find the first round of the playoffs, when you have so many games going on, is arguably the best part of the hockey calendar. You know, one game ends in double overtime and you move on to the next, and that excitement is sustaining itself for those 2 weeks. So I think the notion of having that in the middle of the summer and after just watching no sports for months will make it really enjoyable and hopefully get the players excited, because I know that we'll be excited.
Now, I know Ryan didn't ask you about it, but he certainly didn't leave many details out. What do you remember about that first meeting with Brian Burke, Chris?
Oh, gosh. It's funny. I remember Berkey, I sat down with him, and he said, you know what? He said, you do a ton of things around here, and I have to hire a GM, but you're going to be here for a long time. And then Tree, a little while later, says to me, yeah, Berkey hired me, and he says, I have no idea what this guy does. And so Berkey, he would make me laugh with things like that so often. And we would have these discussions where, you know, he would say, oh, this guy, he only scores on the power play and he only scores on the at home. And I would say, well, actually, Berkey, he is an outstanding 5-on-5 scorer and scores a ton. He'd say, he cut me off. You shut up over there. So we had plenty of moments like that. But what's great about Berkey is he was the ultimate find good people and empower them. And the great thing in my case was we were all already there. And Berkey gave us plenty of time to get to know us. He didn't make big changes, and he was incredibly supportive. You always knew he had your back. So it was it's a unique relationship you have when you work with Brian Burke.
Thanks, Chris. Ton of fun sharing some time with you this morning. All the best. Keep this great story going, and enjoy the social media videos before you're back to the grind here sooner than later.
Thanks, Ryan. Thanks, Will.
Thanks, Snow.
There's Chris Snow.